All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, a special episode of Bubba and the Bloom live from First Pitch, Arizona. We've been waiting for this for a while, Ryan. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Episode 292, for those keeping track at home, since this will be a podcast release later. You can follow me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Bloom, how we doing, my friend?
We're doing all right. A little bit of definite change of roles for us, for those of you all out there that listen to the show regularly. I am like the computer geek, computer guy, with all the stats and the spreadsheets and the colors and stuff like that. My good buddy over here is the caveman who literally writes notes on every episode and what we do. Two things. I now have a notepad with my notes of what I'm going to talk about.
Proud dad over here.
And I couldn't figure out how to turn the projector on at First Pitch Arizona leading up to the show. And Bubba was the tech support. What did you tell me to do?
Hit the power button.
So that's where I'm at today as we enter the live show. But no, appreciate everyone joining us today. Appreciate Ray, Brent giving us the opportunity to do this on the main stage. This is a bit of a pinch me moment. So happy to be here, and thanks to you all for coming.
Do you want to try plugging that back in for a second? Because the slideshow has kaputted on us. I don't know what happened.
Should I turn it back on?
Yeah, blow on it real quick and turn it back on. Other than that, I guess we'll get started here because Ryan had some cool pictures to show you, but that got postponed for a minute here. Usually, for those new, we do Bloom boards on Tuesday nights and some kind of fab show in season on Thursdays. So we'll have some Bloom boards for you tonight. Are we back? All right, go. Oh, good thought. Doesn't happen often. Bloom boards on Tuesday nights, fab shows on Thursday nights. But in season, we're coming at you still twice a week. We've done position reviews. We'll have previews coming up, ADP stuff, all the goodies. We'll mix in a little bit of all of that today. So hope you guys enjoy it. And Ryan, the floor is yours to embarrass all of us.
Yeah, I already was embarrassed by my older brother who's in the audience today. We got a new logo this year, a big step forward for the Bubba and the Bloom podcast. We actually look semi-professional, I think. I don't know. I see some disagreement out in the audience. So, my brother kindly noted that I look 20 years younger in the logo than I actually am, and can't really disagree with him. But Bubba gave a good rundown of the show. We are just, our kind of show theme is two buddies talking fantasy baseball, and that's pretty much who we are. We're an independent thing out there, and we just, every Tuesday, Thursday night, it's Bubba and the Bloom time. We love hanging out. We're both parents of little kids, and we do this. This is an annual tradition at First Pitch Arizona, where last year we were a day late to First Pitch because of Halloween. So I figured we would embarrass ourselves by posting what we were for Halloween as well with some of our kids. Bubba as a, who was that? Olaf?
That's Olaf. The fact Olaf? You haven't seen Frozen amazes me because that's on loop around my house. It's the second time I've got to wear that outfit, actually, so it's been pretty nice. And that's what you think it is in that bottle, by the way. So, yes, you are correct.
Yeah. And then me on the right, I was a banana. Sure. Excited banana. Because my kids want to make fun of me. They're 4 and 6 years old. My kids want to make fun of me and laugh at me, and that's why they wanted me to be a banana. So that was us for Halloween this year. Bubba, your little one made a podcast appearance on the last show.
We joke about it a lot because her room is next door to my office, and as a single father, she will wake up from time to time, and she's sick right now, so she came on right at the end and decided to lean on the shoulder where the mic was and cough towards the end, so that was a pleasant surprise, but we've kind of been wagering on, like, not officially wagering, but joking about someday she will make her appearance, not realizing dad is busy at 10:30 at night, and there she was, the Thursday evening on YouTube, if you're curious, or you can at least hear her on the podcast.
All right, another thing we love to do, big golfers. We love playing golf. We had the 4th annual Bubba and the Bloom Invitational yesterday here locally in Arizona. Raise your hand, give a shout if you played in the Bubba and the Bloom Invitational yesterday. Beautiful. All right, got a few of us in there. Here's a picture of the whole crew, minus Preppis, a couple others that were late, but had an awesome time yesterday at the course. It was a great time for everybody. All right.
And then just a little plug. We did start a Patreon this last year. There's flyers back there if you're curious. I won't bore you with all of it, but we keep you going all year round on all kinds of goodies there between rankings and Ryan's amazing tools. That's pretty much worth the price of admission in itself, and especially draft season. Got a draft tracker and stuff. That's awesome. And a few more things that we will be announcing down the road once we finalize exactly what we're doing. But we have ideas for this coming season. But go check that out as well. Let's get to the fun, Ryan. The Bloom Boards. What, you know, you made your, I'm not going to, this sounds bad, but what you made your name on, Ryan, was the Bloom Boards. And go away with this one.
All right. So we'll keep it basic for people who, for folks who don't normally listen to the show, who may be in here. As Bubba mentioned, especially in season, we do, every Tuesday, we do what we call Bloom Boards, which is basically a leaderboard of some kind of stat or filter or something that I think is important or meaningful. And then we kind of talk through, use the show to kind of talk through names and just kind of banter about whatever, you know, the stat du jour is on the show. So that's a general description of what Bloom Boards are. You can see they're all colorful. I try to make them all nice and pretty. We'll go through a couple of them today, and then we'll go over and do a middle round draft for today's episode. So Bloom Board number one for the day, and we will throw this back to the audience to maybe fill in some of these question marks that are on the board. What you're looking at here are the biggest fallers in average draft position, ADP, from 2025, so from last season, to 2026 this season. And so on the blue, we've got hitters. On the yellow, we've got pitchers. We'll start with the hitter side. The two question mark names that I've got in there, and we'll throw it to the audience to make some guesses here. Both were top 35 players last season. Had ADPs of 23 and 33, respectively, and are now going outside the top 65. Do we have any guesses for these hitters who have fallen the most ADP-wise? Dan.
As I said, Michael Tucker.
Michael Harris?
Michael Harris.
That's a combination of our two favorite players. It is a scary, scary situation.
Michael Harris is my guy, so that, I take that as a slight.
Now, to be fair, 23 and 33 is way too high for Michael Harris.
Kyle Tucker? Not Kyle Tucker.
Austin Riley?
No.
Jaren Duran
is one of them. He is the top one. Had an ADP last year of 23, and that has now dropped to 69. We got one more.
Jackson Merrill?
No.
Now, this person was mentioned earlier on one of the platforms as a guy that super... Oh, it was in the NFPC room, actually. Massive disappointment this year. You should have benched him towards the end. Mike Mager might have. No, you started to say it. Yes, there you go.
O'Neill, Cruz, and Jaren Duran have dropped from 23 to 69, and then Cruz has dropped from 33 to 77. Bubba, I'll toss it to you. Just general takeaways of on the left side, this hitter side. Do we want to talk Duran, O'Neill, Cruz? How you want to do it?
Well, just kind of in general, because it's obviously early ADP. As many people know, things are going to fluctuate a ton. Right now, it's just pure degenerates that are drafting at this point in time. And one thing that Ryan mentioned when he started talking about these Bloom Boards, what I like to say a lot when we talk about them, these boards just kind of open up the discussion. Like it'll like highlight, like, wow, that stands out a ton. Let's dig in on why, those type of scenarios there. And I just wanted to just, a simple one was Wilson Contreras. I know we did Duran, O'Neill. That ADP of 73 was attractive last year, first base, but he's going to get catcher eligibility. That catcher eligibility is gone, and now one of the top five catchers in fantasy last season has an ADP of 187 because he's just I'll say above an average Joe at first base, but he's getting older and becomes an average Joe. So you're seeing the market already being like, we loved him last year to get all those at-bats. You know, Ben Rice was just talked about on Sleeper on the Bust. You're going to get a bump in ADP there that probably more than Wilson got. And now you're seeing that massive drop-off already. And it's kind of a trend with a lot of those catchers. That's another trend we're seeing. A lot of these catchers that were catchers, like you mentioned, Goose is probably going to go out. There's a lot of those that are starting to take place because defense is not great. But, Wilson stood out to me. That's a 114 pick drop right there.
I'm shocked, Bubba, that you would actually start your analysis with a catcher. A catcher.
I could have blasted Adley Rutschman because you know how big of a fan I am of him, but that drop actually makes sense.
Okay. Well, let's talk Adley because you are known as the catcher's guy. Your theme is catchers matter, which is an odd hill to live on, but we'll roll with it. we obviously know why Wilson Contreras has dropped, the position change. Adley Rutschman, that is a massive drop from 66 ADP in 2025, now down to 164. You were not on Adley at all last year. We had plenty of Adley Rutschman debates, which I lost. So are you in at 164 at least?
No. Not at all, because there's two reasons. A, I think he's good, but the catcher's pool is deeper. I think there's other options that will go in my approach to draft catchers. And he's now competing with Samuel Basayo for playing time. Like, when the team actually says, when they called up Basayo, even though Rutschman's coming back, we want Basayo to be our everyday catcher, that makes me wonder now, is Rutschman going to first base, which then we have another discussion to have. Is he the new Wilson Contreras when that takes place? But at this point in time, is he splitting time with Basayo? Like, the thing that made Adley so well is, A, he hit for average and he played almost every day. And he's not going to probably play every day unless something changes. And if he's not hit for average, the power is not that exceptional. So I'm still not in at 164. I don't have the whole catchers in front of me, but I know for a fact there will be other catchers I like at that range. I can guarantee you that.
I want to go back to the Jaren Duran, O'Neill Cruz thing, because it's fascinating to me, both second, third round guys last year. And I'll throw this out to the audience. We'll do a show of hands, because Jaren Duran and O'Neill Cruz, I know differences there, but roughly around the same ADP right now, 69 and 77. In a 5x5 rotisserie league, who is going to go Jaren Duran over O'Neill Cruz next season as of now? And then team O'Neill Cruz, show yourselves.
That's a heavy Jaren Duran.
It's a heavy Jaren Duran lean. I'm honestly fine with both. I think, especially at the price, Jaren Duran, I think, is coming off of what we think is a down season that forced him to drop over 40 points or 40 spots in ADP. That quote-unquote down season for Jaren Duran, 16 homers, 24 steals, but 86 runs, 84 RBI. Like, I just think the floor of the plate appearances with Jaren Duran, let's assume he stays in Boston for the sake of this conversation. We just heard from, in the NFBC takeaways panel earlier today, Stephen Goodwin did an amazing presentation on the importance of at-bats. He's right. I see you, Stephen.
Steve-O-Swerve.
The importance of at-bats and how that correlates with hitting points in fantasy. And Jaren Duran, again, anyone can get hurt at any time. The plate appearance ceiling is so high for Jaren Duran. I think price 69 is very nice.
Well, then I'm going to throw this one back at you, as you threw into me. Is Duran at 69 or your boy Michael Harris at 90 more appealing to you? Because they seem quite similar to me, all things considered.
Why do you keep bringing up Michael Harris?
It's the theme of our show, folks.
My biggest miss last year, so he loves to bring him back up. Anyone on this list, Bubba, that you...
You didn't answer the question.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a politician. I'm not answering that question. I'll just reverse it with a question to you. I think... Like Marcell Ozuna is the top one. I think we all know why Marcell Ozuna is dropping and has dropped. Outside of Ozuna, who on this list, Bubba, like, are you, and I guess Adley Rutschman, are you still out on at the reduced price?
Oh, out on? That changed. I was going to go the other direction there, but out.
You could just not answer Mike. I mean, nah, question and I can.
Nah, the law dog is still a massive question mark to me right now, Lawrence Butler. I have a lot of questions involving him. He had the big second half 2 years ago, and then we saw him this year just completely look lost at the plate. And he's young. He can go make changes. There's a lot of things. But then the A's have depth in the outfield. They were preferring defense with Denzel Clark in center before he got hurt. There was a lot of, like, moving parts there with the Sacramento that I'm very concerned about Butler and 133 to me. Again, this early, it's November 7th. Seems a little rich for me. Now, is there anybody on this list you love with this new ADP? Because there is one that stands out big time to me.
Bubba Berger. Jake Berger. I think dropping down from 119 to 294, I know the oblique has been an issue. I know Jake Berger's real-life fantasy value is not that great, so I'd love to see a little bit more playing time safety. But at 294, I think this guy can absolutely mash. And in 5x5 roto leagues, they use batting average. Like points leagues and OBP, that's a little different because my man does not run, but he also doesn't walk, which... I could make more jokes there, but I won't.
How do you train an oblique? I don't know.
Yeah, how do you train an oblique if you can't run or walk? I just think the price on Jake Berger is pretty sweet.
I'm always a fan with that. The one that stands out to me, though, just a massive difference, and maybe I'm just overthinking it, is Matt McClain at 211. First year back from missing a whole season, we still saw a guy that put forth, you know, 15 homers, 18 steals. Batting average is horrible. Swing and miss is still very bad. Not going to deny any of that, but massive drop in BABIP. Like, is this a guy that can start to kind of regain things? I don't think he's ever going to be the 290 guy that he was, but if we're getting a 15-15, 20-20 potential after pick 200, that's at least, you know, worth a debate in my consideration.
All right, pitcher side. Bring the audience back in. We have same thing, biggest droppers. I have filtered out, like, obvious injured guys. So these are guys who at least pitched and are scheduled to pitch again in 2026. Any guesses on our two biggest pitcher fallers? Mr. Horton.
Framber Valdez.
Incorrect. Mr. Sokolsky. Incorrect. Chris Sale. Dylan Cease.
Sadly, RIP.
And Bailey Ober. Bailey Ober and Dylan Cease are two of our biggest pitcher fallers. Bailey Ober falling from 83 to 249. And Dylan Cease from 44 to 84. Bubba, we went back and forth many times during draft season comparing Aaron Nola to Dylan Cease. And they are both on this list as fallers, so maybe we were both wrong. What's your take on Dylan Cease? I think you're still.
I'm still.
I think he's still your guy.
I enjoy the dip in ADP. Like, we've talked about it many times. Ratios are always going to be the question mark with him. We've seen him be absolutely elite, like not a Cy Young, but an ace, a fantasy ace for sure. And then we've seen, like last year, where the 4.55. So you get the ups and the downs with Cease. You get the whips, ups and downs with Cease, but. One thing he does oh so well is strike out people. That is what Dylan Cease does in spades. So it depends on how you want to build your roster. But, you know, we've had, like, in Steve's presentation earlier today, and then with Ray yesterday, talking about strikeouts and fewer guys throwing innings to get 200 Ks and so on and so forth. A stat that I brought up a ton last year for that interests me in Dylan Cease and still will. This season he struck out 215 hitters. That is five straight seasons of over 200 strikeouts. You can't find many other pitchers in baseball. Maybe you can't find any. I haven't looked it up, but there ain't many, I'll tell you that much. So to pinpoint a 200 strikeout guy that, you know, if he starts running well, you get a mid to low 3 ERA, that's outstanding. He and then you look at all the Sierras and all those kind of indicators. He ran real poor this season, so I am fully back in on Dylan Cease. Obviously, landing spot, if he goes and decides to sign with Sacramento for some goofy reason, would change things, but all in all, I like some Dylan Cease.
He is definitely the most expensive on this list still, right? Dylan Cease of the fallers is the only top 100 pitcher.
But you know I like to wait on pitching, so that's like an ace for me.
That is your SP1, at least. Any other on the pitchers? We want to go to the next one?
Yeah, I don't got a whole lot on the pitchers just yet because most of them just had such, like, Bailey Ober. I'll talk about him tomorrow, actually. Wow, that was a bad season. Yeah, let's move on to this one.
All right. Another metric we like to talk about on the show a ton, and I know we go to a bunch of different panels here at First Pitch. There's a lot to take in. I think at the end of the day, our favorite pitcher metric, and this is, I mean, pretty, I don't want to say universally accepted, but if there's one number you want to use to evaluate a pitcher and to keep things simple, it would be strikeout minus walk rate. League average on it, I believe, is around 15-16%. I like to use it just to as one number for actually how good a pitcher is, just strikeouts and walks, super simple. What we're looking at this board are over the last 2 months of the season, and I say this all the time on our podcast, is pitchers can change a ton. Velocities can change, arm angles, movement, pitch mix, all that kind of stuff. Pitchers can change very quickly, for better and for worse, especially with injuries. What we're looking at here is the biggest gainers and fallers, gainers in green, fallers in red, and strikeout minus walk rate from April through July compared to August and September. And again, roughly league average is like 16% K minus walk. So that's your baseline. Anything above 20% is really damn good. So do we have any guesses as to who the top two gainers in strikeout minus walk rate in the last 2 months of the season would be?
Well, that's got real
quiet. I saw a Yamamoto guess, incorrect.
Nope.
Kevin Gossman, no.
One of them will shock people.
One of them has a really long name. I'm extremely anal about, like, how my bloom boards look.
He
God,
is.
That sounded weird. The hint for the top green dude, his name is so long, it goes on as, the row is twice as long as the other rows. That annoys the hell out of me, but his name's so long that it is.
Yes.
Simeon Woods Richardson, that is correct.
Yep.
Went from 10% K-minus walk in the first 4 months of the season up to 22%. My hint for the last, for the second gainer, Mr. Pollock, do you have a...
No.
Not George Kirby, but... Same team and should have pitched one more inning in the ALCS Game 7. Not Logan Gilbert.
You're not bitter at all?
Brian Wu.
That's correct.
It's number two. And Brian Wu not only up to 29% strikeout minus walk, I believe that was the highest strikeout minus walk of any pitcher after August 1st. Brian Wu was, by that metric, the best pitcher of the last 2 months of the season. So Simeon Woods Richardson is interesting to me. And neither of us are pitching experts, like arsenal experts, but new split finger for Simeon Woods Richardson. And I think not only just a thing on SWR, it's just if you see a change in skill and to what Bubba was saying earlier, these bloom boards are the start of a conversation for a lot of these guys. It's like, oh, I didn't, I would usually look at Simeon Wood Richardson's name and throw up in my mouth because he's been terrible. It's like, whoa, why is Simeon Wood Richardson on here? And you dig a little bit deeper, it's the start of that conversation. For Woods Richardson, a pretty much new splitter at the end of the season, picked up a ton of strikeouts at the end. That's interesting to me, at least at a price. I don't know where he's going in price or whatever, but it's a good example of a pitcher, I don't want to say remaking himself, but making legit changes to his arsenal, and obviously the skills approve of that change. That's something that's interesting to me in draft season.
Yeah, his ADP is 389 early on, so free. But it's pretty impressive when Ryan basically split up first half and second half with the slides, and Richardson pretty much missed all of August. He threw three innings. So that stat is basically September when he came back from his injury, or his minor leagues, I can't even remember what it is now because he's so bad, might have been minors, with that splitter, 2.33 ERA to go with that mix. And it was slugging percentage of 256. He was shutting people down with that pitch, and it was a drastic change. It was one of those that we did with Bloom Board and saw it kind of stand out, the pitch mix change Bloom Board, but that's because we do, once a month, we'll do the live Bloom Boards Ryan has created, and there is a pitch mix change on that Bloom Board. There's also a K-to-walk change for just, every rolling 30 days.
Yep.
And Woods was just boom, boom, on all these boards all of a sudden, and we both just on the show were like, what is going on right now? Is your stuff broken? And then, no, you just dug in farther, and You looked at it, it was a legit change. It's a change like Eno Saris is back there, and he wrote about how in the playoffs he saw a ton of splitters, and we're going to keep seeing it. SWR is one of the spitting examples now. Was it a one-month, hey, figured it out for a month, and he'll lose it again next year? Who knows? I know Nick Pollock is not the biggest fan of splitters because of the inconsistency that can develop with them.
You're putting words in his mouth. Look at him. Look at him.
I'm not that far off. There you go, see? Okay. But it's very good to see, and it's one of those things that an ADP of around 400, why not take a shot on a guy that could blossom quite a bit?
One other name, at least to me, that's interesting on this list is Sandy Alcantara, number four in terms of the rise of strikeout minus walk rate from the first 4 months of the season versus the last two. And again, context with these boards is everything. As we all know, Sandy had missed all of 2024 with Tommy John rehab, and... how did that command look when Sandy came back? The velocity was there, the command was not. But it's interesting to me that Sandy, the last 2 months of the season, wasn't vintage Sandy, but was a hell of a lot better than what we saw from Sandy for most of the season.
Yeah, he was much better. He's a question mark on, what do we do with Sandy coming into this season. The guy I wanted to bring up, we talked about on a recent, the starting pitching review we did recently, but... it involves Jesus Luzardo because he's on this list. So I keep wanting to remind people they have the horror story of those 20 earned runs he basically allowed in two starts as people thought he was the next Cy Young candidate in the conversation before that. Then he gets blown up for two starts. But you see him on this list with a nice 26.1 K to walk over the last basically 2 months of the season. And if you dig in deeper after that, those two 20 run outings, he was back to being pretty darn good, a 3.57 ERA for Lizardo with a 3.25 Sierra, and our stat here, 22.5% K to walk. So he's back to being an extremely serviceable pitcher where people were dropping him, people were benching him, people were frustrated with him. If you just look at, like, obviously you have to take those 20 runs if you started him. There's no way around that. But if you look at the total picture at the end game, look, prepping for 2026, he was pretty darn elite when things were all said and done. So I wouldn't just write him off. And again, that's why he stands out on the board to me.
All right, pitcher side. Biggest fallers, or faller side for the
pitchers.
They're
both pitcher sides.
Yeah, thanks. Biggest fallers, two guesses. Matthew Boyd. I actually don't know what the answers are. What's
Framber
the answers?
Framber is.
Framber Valdez is one.
Mackenzie Gore, my boy. Yep.
Martin says Mackenzie Gore was the top faller in strikeout minus walk the last 2 months of the season compared to the first four. Bubba, this is where I'm actually going to put you down. I lifted you up earlier, but I can't.
How's your back?
My back's not good from that. Can't let that shiny dome get too big. You were a big Mackenzie Gore fan entering the season. What's your take on what we saw from him?
The highs and lows of being a Mackenzie Gore fan. It looked like, wow, he figured it out. And then we realized the second half exists again, and he, for some reason, just disappears. Now, there was moments again towards the end where it looked good, but until he can prove it for a year now, I'm probably out. It's really frustrating because he showed some really, really good skills. He was leading baseball in strikeouts, for crying out loud, for a while there, and then it just fell off the map completely. So I know it's poor analysis. There's probably deeper things you can get to, but in the end, for fantasy, he just didn't do it.
A couple things and kind of notes of caution in terms of looking at these Bloom boards, right? So Logan Gilbert and Tarik Skubal are on this list. Dropped from pretty much a 30% strikeout minus walk rate, which is like godlike, to just really good, like 23% for both of those guys. I'm not worried about Logan Gilbert or Tarik Skubal. Still, they just went from elite, a level that's very hard to sustain, to 23%, which is still really good. So I think the other two interesting names for me are Framber and Spencer Strider.
Those are the two standouts.
Really, Strider. I mean, you were off Strider all year. We just don't know what internal brace kind of does to pitchers who A, come back, but then how they look. It was a brutal finish for Strider.
It was really bad, and it came to the point we were like saying, why don't you just rest him? He's got his innings, whatever, and they just wanted more and more and more, and that's fine. His ratios were good towards in his last month of the season at least, but you'd watch a live broadcast with Atlanta or the beat writers on Twitter or whatever, and they'd flat out say his fastball had nothing as the season went on. Like, it was so hittable. But then the slider was, he's at least getting ground balls and a little bit of swing and miss out of it. Now, again, it could be the brace procedure. It could be a million things. I am not a doctor. I'm staying at a Sheraton, not a Holiday Inn. So I don't know how to help with that. But, yeah, I was very concerned with how that went down last year.
Not great.
What do you make of Brown and Rodon?
That's a good one as well. Those are two guys I had lots of shares of this year.
So the question was, what do we make of Hunter Brown and Carlos Rodon?
Rodon was one of those that was, it felt like when you'd watch him and the results up on that board show a lot, it was kind of a smoke and mirrors towards the end there. You were just praying he got through six at times because there were some rough innings along the way. It was not ideal. Hunter Brown was one, like, so it's your Rodon question. I really don't know. It was ugly towards the end, and obviously wasn't fooling guys, and his walks were an issue along with the long ball as well. The stadium helped him in New York, roughly enough. Hunter Brown was one that I wonder if it's, you know, like, went up to 185 innings, which is not a major bump, but he's still moving up the list. It's a guy that I've had many debates here in years past with co-hosts on Benched with Bubba. Hunter Brown is Mitch Keller, and I argue that to the T's. I am a Hunter Brown fan. Hunter Brown had a really, really rough July, but like, his August was elite again, and we're now talking August, September in this one. You look at his numbers in August and September, he still had a 22% K rate in August and a 25% in September. It was just, he had basically a 30% K rate in March, May, and June. He was just very, very good. And his July was 27%. It ducked down to 22 and 25. That's still very, very good, like, to the point that he was making with Google and company. Yeah, it wasn't elite. He's still a finalist for the Cy Young Award. So I'd say things still went pretty well.
I do think Hunter Brown's being overdrafted early for 2026. I don't know if there's enough missed bats there to truly be an SP1, but we will find out. Anybody else on the pitcher side before we do our next?
Oh, let's rock and roll.
All right. So another big thing we talk about on the show, and we'll go into this a lot more in like February and March, is we talk about the middle rounds of drafts. We really emphasize that, and I truly think the key to consistently winning in fantasy baseball is to dominate those middle rounds. Obviously, easier said than done. I just think so much attention gets put on the first 100 picks, or so much attention on in-season fab, of course, but then also these kind of like late deep sleepers. The early round picks, for the most part, they're all good. Like, I'm not going to sit here and debate like Garrett Crochet versus Scooble versus Skeens. It's a fun debate, but I think in terms of like, we all have a finite amount of time to prep for fantasy leagues. I think your effort is much more, your time is much better spent deep diving into these middle round types of pitchers. And I'm going to throw this out. This Greg Ambrosius, who runs the NFBC, posted this on the NFBC message boards a couple weeks ago. He did, so on teams that won the main event, the 15-team NFBC kind of signature contest, the most commonly drafted players on those teams in 2025 were Nate Eovaldi, ADP of 190, George Springer, ADP of 256, Dansby Swanson, 165, Griffin Canning. I have no idea why Griffin Canning is on that list, but he was We can all make mistakes. He was the fourth most common drafted player on championship teams. And then Chris Bubich. That's the top five. None of those guys went in the top 50, and only Griffin Canning, who was still really bad, went outside the top 250. I just think that's a really good example of like the guys that are available in the middle rounds, they are good enough to be able to put up second, third round value, like a Nate Eovaldi, a Springer, who put up first round value. Those guys are good enough to be able to do that. Whereas, like, in all honesty, if you're diving deep after post, you know, ADP 300, most likely at the end of the day, you are dropping those guys and churning those roster spots. I truly believe the middle round is where drafts are won in fantasy.
Yeah, it's the old adage, like, you can lose your draft early, but you can win it in the middle type thing. You're not going to probably win it with your first picks, the whole deal. And for those that are new, this is how Ryan and I met, was doing a podcast with me. We just drafted the middle round every offseason. That's how he jumped on my show for that. And so it is a very important part of what we do here.
And even, like, I hate to do this, but I won Labor Mix this season, 15-team league.
He ran away with it, by the way.
But my first two pitcher picks were Devin Williams in the third round and Michael King in the sixth round. How did I win Labor? Nate Eovaldi, Chris Sanchez, Matthew Boyd, those middle rounds. Trust me, I don't dominate the middle rounds often, but that is how that blueprint of how that team won and ran away with Labor was with these middle rounds. So I hate that I just said that, but anyway.
All right.
So what we're going to do, go ahead.
Yeah. No, so we're going to go rounds 10 through 15. And this will be for, we try to stay in the 12-team realm. So many people talk main events, and that's a phenomenal deal. But most people that listen to shows play 10 and 12-team leagues. That's just the brass tack. So we stick to the 12-teamers here. This will be NFBC 50s. It's basically the draft and hold format for 12-team leagues. Early ADP here. So that's why you see 12 players on each slide. I don't need to read them all to you. ADP's 109 to 120, but we will each pick a player that we like in this range, and we might just discuss some things we notice right now that stand out to us. So in round 10, it's 109 through 120. Ryan, who is your main target in this range?
I'm going to get out ahead of this and pick a catcher because I know this guy is going to pick some type of catcher on this list. Not only a catcher, but an old catcher. Anyone who follows the podcast knows I love old people, and I love a lot of this audience out here. I'm kidding. I don't like young people. I love my kids. Outside of that, if you're below 30 years old, you're not on my team. Bubba's telling me to stop before we don't get invited back to First Pitch Arizona 2026. I'm going to go Sal Perez. He's old. He's consistent. The price is very nice at 109. 19% K rate, 15% barrel rate. That is anytime those two numbers, your strikeout rate and your barrel rate, are even close to each other, that is an awesome sign. Coming off a 30 home run season, 100 RBI, Sal Perez. Also his first base. I think, and especially in draft and hold formats, which is what we're drafting right now, we may overlook that a catcher plays first base. I have many draft and hold teams. And again, these draft and holds are 50 rounds. You can't make in-season pickups. Shaking our head over there, or nodding your head, Michael, so you agree with that. You will probably want to play Salvador Perez at first base at some point in your draft and hold team. Injuries will pop up. You may put him at utility. You may put him at corner. It's nice to have that first base eligibility, even though you want to use him as a catcher.
There's a lot to be said about that, like with Wilson Contreras last year. I remember in many draft and holds, I had him at first base, corner infield. I barely played him at catcher, probably, when things were all said and done. So, yeah, Salvi, dude still hits bombs, and he just took a heck of a team-friendly deal in Kansas City. So they'll let Carter Jansen catch and watch Salvi do his thing. So I don't hate that, of course, because catchers matter. I'm going to go with Michael Busch, though. I'm going to stick in the power department here for two things. We did our first base review, Ryan. Not great. Outside of the elite players.
Not great at all.
Not great. Like, the top five or six or eight were pretty good. Still not great. After that, Michael Busch was great. Again, it could be, I don't want to call it a career year. Let's not forget, this was a prospect in L.A. that we all said, just give us playing time. And they traded him, and here he goes. Finally got the playing time. Looked like he was going to lose some to Justin Turner, of all people, at one point in time. But ended up hitting .261 with 34 home runs and 90 RBIs. It's something that always sticks with me, and was emphasized again on the NFBC panel today, is power, runs, RBIs, home runs. You get all three. It's a big deal when planning these things out. And with Busch, the other things that stand out with a young hitter like Busch, where you see the power increase, you wonder if, okay, how's the swing and miss and all that. His strikeout rate's dropped in three straight seasons. It was down to 23.5% this last year, which is really good to see, in my opinion. And then just the quality of contact just went through the roof this year. Some may say he underachieved in what Michael Busch did. So I have no problem jumping on him here, knowing that first base is going to be overall really ugly, even in the first two drafts I've done. If you're not aggressive at first base, you might get an okay guy as your first baseman, but depth is just horrific at the position. So I'll go with Michael Busch here in round 10.
Interesting pitcher crop here as well, because again, going back to what I said earlier about the middle rounds, and these guys have the ability to really break out and post that top 1, 2, 3 round value. Carlos Rodon could absolutely do that. Zach Wheeler has done that many times. Jacob Mizorowski has the ability, we think, to do that. We may gripe about the innings. Just an interesting crop of
And Michael King.
And maybe if Michael King gets a better pillow to sleep on.
He needs to get a sleep comfort mattress or something, because my goodness, that was rough.
Yeah, that was rough. All right, round 11. I will let you be nice to you, Bubba. You know who I'm going to pick, unless you copy off my piece of paper here.
No, I respect the notepad.
Who you taking?
I'm actually, again, looking at a position that is maybe worse than first base, and it's second base. So I'm going to look at Luke Kuechel here. I know I just emphasized how important power is a second ago. This is a guy that he runs for days and he hits for average. And unlike Luis Arraez, he can probably get you 10 to 15 home runs. So it's another guy that I like a ton. They let him lead off in Minnesota, which why wouldn't they at this point in time, or at least at the top of the order? He could be a run producer. And again, if you haven't looked at second base yet, just look at it quickly, but do it before you eat, because it is really, really bad, and you won't like the result of it. But so Luke Kuechel's one. If he goes and starts having a couple good weeks in spring, that number is going to skyrocket, I have a feeling. So take advantage while you can.
Teoscar Hernandez was one of my favorite buys in 2025. He's old. He's consistent. He's good. Coming off a down year. Like an old guy who's not, like, super old, but is still, like, has a track record and is good. Right in my wheelhouse. So Teoscar Hernandez, down year in terms of batting average, but that pretty much BABIP driven, 340 BABIP type guy. That was down to 283 2025. Still going to have a great lineup. I think Teoscar is an absolute steal in roughly pick 120 to 125. I'm fascinated by these pitchers. Again, we won't go through all these guys, but just the dichotomy between the youths, between Cam Schlittler, Nolan McLean, and Chase Burns, and then you've got three olds right after them, and Brandon Woodruff, Kevin Gausman, and Shane Bieber. That's, again, just totally different profiles, different types of guys going right next to each other. You know, I don't have a, I haven't dove in yet to see who I like with that group, but it's just an interesting, two totally different cohorts of people there.
Yeah, first off, I give Ryan a hard time, but I do like T. Oscar, so that's fine. That's a good pick. But
he is a Dodger, though. I don't...
Well, when they draft all of the all-star players or they sign them, you have to eventually just suck it up and draft some of them. That's a reality. Like, embrace the pain or something. Yeah, with the pitching, it's interesting because you look at a lot of young guys, you're wondering, okay, what's the innings limit? Okay. Well, you got Brandon Woodruff, injury. Kevin Gossman's getting older and older. Shane Bieber, injury. Like, how many innings do these guys go? Now, you could use the old adage with, like, the Chris Sales of the world and stuff. For the old guys, they're just going to let them go until the wheels fall off. Who knows? But... that's the question. Now, McLean's been pretty stretched out. Burns should be good to go, and you never know with Cam, it happens. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting on that. Do you take the upside in one of those, the Burns, Schlittler, McLean's, or you take the old man is the tough one? And I usually lean old man with the pitching like you do, but it's a very interesting pocket, to say the least.
Cam, it happens.
That's... I had to clean it up for FPAS. Very simple, wow. Folks.
All right.
Round 12, ADP 133 through 144. It's another intriguing pocket, to say the least. If anybody knows Ryan at all, you already know who he's going to pick on this one because he picks him every year since I've probably known him since he's been in the big. So I'll just give you the floor. What pitcher are you taking off the board, Ryan? And I have not looked at your pad.
Yeah. What pitcher do you think I'm going to take? I'm actually curious.
I think it's a lefty out of Cincinnati.
Damn it. I thought you were going to say Pablo Lopez.
No.
I loved Pablo Lopez.
Nah.
I thought Pablo Lopez was like, man, shoulder problems early in his career. So that was off of Pablo Lopez. And then he gets 2-3 seasons of just awesome volume. And then it pops up again in 2025. Yeah, it's Nick Lodolo. In most years, it would be Pablo Lopez. But I need to see Pablo pitch in the spring, see what that velocity looks like before I dive back in. Nick Lodolo, for me, he's a little young for my liking, but we'll make some exceptions. Nick Lodolo in the second half last season, to go back to the strikeout minus walk rate, the bloom board that we talked about earlier. In the second half of the season last year, Nick Lodolo was number 5 in strikeout minus walk among all qualified pitchers. So finished the season really strong. The volume has not been there. The thing, though, for me with the Lodolo, I'm willing to kind of give him a pass for all that because it's been a bunch of, like, non-arm stuff. It's been a finger. It's been a groin, a calf. Like, I think at some point we get a full season of innings from Nick Lodolo, and I think the skills are absolutely there for Nick Lodolo to be a top 5-round player that you're getting in round 12.
Yeah, love Lodolo. Jumped on him with you last year, and it panned out well. It's a good pocket. Like, Shota, Pablo, Lodolo, Gavin Williams, Trevor Rogers, I like all these guys, so I could see them all being very intriguing come draft time, especially since I keep talking hitters. We're going to talk another hitter, though. Nuovi Marte stands out in a massive way to me here.
Way too young.
Outfield third base is similar to your first base catcher, but outfield third base, now you got corner, third base, and outfield utility. Like, you're covering a lot of bases here. 23 years old. You'll be 24 this year. It seems like we've talked about Nuovi Marte for a long time. And yes, 24 is too young. I know. But it's a guy that, you know, he had the PED issues and whatnot, but came back last year in 90 games, 14 homers, 10 stolen bases. So we got the power and the speed, hit 263. He actually took over to the outfield better than I expected. We saw increases in the quality of contact, which is great. And again, similar to like Michael Busch, in 2024 in the small sample, Nuovi Marte struck out 31% of the time, looked lost up there, back down to 23.6% this past year, strikeout rate. So we saw a much better Nuovi Marte as the season went on. You can always enjoy a Great American Small Park whenever you can. So Nuovi Marte is just a young ball player. He's got that positional flexibility. Third base is another one of those positions after J-Ram and Caminero where it gets interesting. Like, do you want to take the Chapmans and those kind of plays, or do you want to take a chance on an upside like Marte? I think Marte's ceiling is very, very high. And, like, I've even looked at Steamer. What do they have him at here? They have him at 20-16, hitting 256 over 133 games. I think that's low. For one, I think he plays at least 150 games, unless he gets hurt. So you start projecting 25-20 at that point. I'm in.
When do you think to bring this always back to catchers? You got Ivan Herrera on the list. So depending on, this is 20-game eligibility, depending on your league, Ivan Herrera might be catcher eligible. When do you think he gets in-season catcher eligibility? I know you're not a Cardinals expert, but you are the catcher guy, so.
I love me some Herrera. He got 14 games of catchers last year, so if you play in Yahoo, he's definitely catcher eligible for the next four seasons probably. But, yeah, there's other options there for you. He's got to get 10 games in NFBC, and they're all saying he had the surgery. They want to get him back behind the plate as quick as possible, but he also is the best defensive catcher. Pajes is pretty good behind the dish. We know how the Cardinals regime, they like to play 1970 baseball. So it's tricky in that regard. I would like to say by the end of the first month, Herrera is a catcher. We said that about, you know, Brent Rooker in the outfield and some other guys last season. It took a little longer than we liked, but I don't think it'll be too long, but it'll be longer than it should be. Let's put it that way.
There are Cardinals fans in the room, Bubba, 1970s baseball. They may agree with that.
I'm probably not far off. Let's get Matt Thompson on the line. He'll tell you.
There we go. Bad thing about it is it's true. Mr. Horton down there. Okay. All right.
You ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Round 13 coming your way. ADP 145 to 156. No more closers off the board here. Even one closer that's unemployed at the moment. So that mixes it up here. But then, well, you could potentially have three closers if you're a Roki Sasaki believer. A lot more hitters on this board, Ryan. Outside of Adley Rutschman, who are you interested in?
Adley Rutschman, no, I'm kidding. Brenton Doyle for me. I just think this is someone last season. So again, this is round 13. This is pick roughly 150. Last season, Brenton Doyle was going at an ADP of 74. So I just think, like, in general, that the market is really high on somebody like they were on Brenton Doyle a year ago. And granted, he was coming off a really good season back in 24. Like, I think that skill is still there. In Brenton Doyle's case, like, I don't really think, I wrote him up. I had his box in the Baseball Forecaster, and I, you know, you really dive into the skills when you're writing those boxes. The skills were really not that far off for Brenton Doyle, especially in the second half. Brenton Doyle, unfortunately, had a really bad personal family tragedy, lost his child in the first half of last year, I think early in the season. Has to factor in to what, you know, to how these humans perform on the field. Second half, Brenton Doyle was a lot better. And again, the skills are not far off at all in terms of how often he hits the ball, how hard he hits the ball from the breakout season of 2024. So I think you're getting someone who's young enough to rebound, who, again, just a year ago had half of this ADP. I think Brenton Doyle's a screaming buy at this price.
Yeah, you know how I feel on Brenton Doyle. Big fan. I already have two drafts in the books. I have two Brenton Doyle shares. So I like him quite a bit. Last year, like you mentioned, we talked about it a lot on the show because people were asking, do we drop Brenton Doyle? What do we do with Brenton Doyle? You write it out. He hit 282 in the second half. He had eight homers, nine steals. Like, that's pretty darn. He still finished with 15 homers and 18 steals on a season where he could throw a lot of that season away, basically. So I am all aboard getting back on Brenton Doyle. And this is a guy that, like you were saying, was like a top 10 pick last year. I think he'll be a top 10 pick before the season starts. Let's put it that way. Like, I know he's 13, it's not that far off, but I think he's looking top 8 pick if we want, or top 8 round pick if we really want to get goofy. He's going to move up quite a bit.
What's your take on, so you drafted Roki Sasaki, I believe, in the meatball draft. And before we get to Sasaki himself, this is a case where you're drafting early. Drafting early obviously has its disadvantages. You're giving these players 5 months' time to be able to get hurt, which a lot of them will follow through on that.
My first three pitchers did.
Opportunity, especially if you're Bubba and you draft Zach Wheeler and who?
Nate Eovaldi.
Trevor McGill. So basically don't draft anyone, I'm kidding, who Bubba drafted. But like, Roki Sasaki to me is someone, if the Dodgers come out and say he is our closer in 2026, or even if they don't say it, and Roki Sasaki is, if you can get Roki Sasaki at 150, that's the benefit of drafting early. Obviously, there's some drawback there. We don't know what the Dodgers are going to do with Roki Sasaki, but man, I just think like that. I don't even want to say he's a polarizing player, but like the range of outcomes for fantasy usefulness for Roki Sasaki, he could be the best closer in a game, or he could not be a closer at all, or he could try and go back and start and probably get hurt. So all of these things could happen. It's fascinating to see him right there.
It is. The reason I took him in that draft, for anybody that does care, is with my injured pitchers, I needed saves or a good starter. So I kind of checked both boxes.
Or another pitcher with a lot of injury history.
And I was like paying attention like everybody else to the improvements he made when he was in the minors. Like you saw a different pitch mix from Sasaki. He's a different confidence in Sasaki, young ball player, first time in America. I don't want to compare the skill sets of the two, but if we're talking ADP differences, you said 150 with Sasaki, Mason Miller's at 60. Do we know if he's starting or closing? Like, these are the questions you have here. And I think Sasaki's very talented, but I think Miller's more talented. But just kind of the discussions you start having this time of the year going into 2026 with these questions we have on certain pitchers.
Who's your guy? Is it Sasaki or is it somebody else?
No, mine's Ryan Pepiot. This is a guy that I also have, I think, at least one, if not two, shares of in my first two drafts. Very, very... Like, I've dug into a lot of these Tampa Bay guys, really not as much as Jason Klett, who goes to sleep listening to their stats on repeat. I do enjoy looking at them because the splits were real with some of these guys, like real, real, in Steinbrenner Field. But even with Steinbrenner Field, you still saw a Pepe with a 3.86 ERA, which coming out of that was pretty darn impressive. The whips have been great his entire career. And we beat it like a dead horse, but you mentioned that Kato Walk averages at like 15, 16%. He was 15.6%. He's been 17.4, 20.8. We've seen a lot of good with Ryan Pepiot. Now we're talking around pick 150, so we're talking our third, maybe fourth starting pitcher, depending on how you're drafting. If I can get a Pepiot who we might not even have seen the highest level of him yet, he's still 27, he'll be 28 this year, maybe going back into the trop where they... Now, see, I'm still torn. I'll talk to Klett later about this. Yes, they're going back to the trop, but do they get rid of the batter's eye that all hitters hate there when they rebuild it? Like, there's still some questions I have, but it's still going to be a better ballpark than Steinbrenner Field. And for that reason, I like Ryan Pepiot.
All right. We got round 14, then 15 is our last round, and we'll probably have a little bit of time if anyone wants to ask us some questions. But round 14... picks 157 through 168. Before I ask you your pick, Bubba, another one where just two old, Sonny Gray and Nate Eovaldi sandwiched Bubba Chandler and Trey Savage. Like, that's just same ADP, same spot in the draft, completely different players, different generations almost, and just different in terms of how you draft, like different risk tolerance. And again, it's interesting to see those types of players right next to each other in a draft right now. But those guys aside, I guess, Bubba, who's your guy here?
First, I will admit, Ryan has slowly swayed me on Luis Castillo, not who I'm picking, but I understand.
Dude,
the appreciation
old,
for
consistent.
Now.
Consistent.
Boring, yes.
Boring.
I get it. For me, it's Sonny Gray. I'm going to go back to the well. This is a guy I seem to draft almost every season because his ADP is never high. Like, he's always your three or four, like, SP on your roster. And last year, he did the whole Zach Greinke, like, oh, I'm hurt. I don't want to pitch in spring training because I'm old and I've done it a million times. And, you know, the 35-year-old threw 180 innings. Like, he still was great. The 4.28 ERA is the frustrating part with Sonny Gray, but it came with a 1.23 whip, his worst since 2021. But you're looking at a guy that also had a Sierra of 329. He's had a 303. Like, the Sierra's been below four every year since 2019. The guy is consistently good. And what I also like about Sonny Gray, which we talked about a ton with Sonny Gray, he had a 21.6% K to walk. The dude had almost 27% strikeout rate at age 35. Like, last year at a 30, or two years ago, 30% strikeout rate. We've seen a guy that's actually striking more guys out the last two seasons. And if he can somehow just, he got BABIP to death this past season. So if we can improve on that, I think Sonny Gray at age 36, I'll go back to the well. Sorry to steal one of your olds, Ryan, but that is a guy that I'm a huge fan of once again.
I approve. Sonny Gray was interesting last season. Like, yes, you mentioned the ERA 4.28 or whatever you said.
Yeah.
Still had 14 wins, which I was listening to Baseball HQ Radio doing with PD and Todd and Ray Murphy, and Ray made this point. I may mess up the number. I think it was 9 pitchers in 2025 had 15 wins or more. That is not many pitchers. For Sonny Gray to be able to pitch deep into games, get 14 wins, obviously that a lot, it, you know, is at play in terms of run support and bullpen, that sort of thing. I like that pick there. I'm going to go, so I mentioned Dansby Swanson earlier as he was the third most commonly drafted player among NFBC main event champion teams in 2025. His ADP that year was 165. Sonny, or Dansby Swanson's ADP is now 160. It's the same ADP. Dansby Swanson is just a volume machine. The skills, the power skills are really good as well. Just think this is the type of player in the middle rounds. Like, yeah, Dansby Swanson probably doesn't have top five round upside or whatever, but you need to pair some of those upside plays with kind of these rocks, these volume rocks that are able to kind of get you those plate appearances. So Dansby Swanson, to me, it's just funny how he was third most commonly drafted player last year, and he's going the exact same price this season.
Sounds good to me. Let Dansby just hang out for the rest of us. But you mentioned that the pitchers, the Gray, Eovaldi, old man with Chandler and Savage in the middle there. The other one that stands out when looking at this board here is you got Chandler Simpson and Jacob Marcy on this page.
Yeah.
And Chandler Simpson can't hit the ball out of a silo if he popped it up, but he's going to steal like 70 bases if he plays every day. That's a big if there. Jacob Marcy, he could be like, well, some think he's the next great thing. Now, that's a big sum. I'm not a prospect guy, we all know. But he was a gangbuster last year. He hit for some power, hit for speed, average was up and down. But I'm actually very surprised to see Marcy this low, I guess, compared to Simpson this high. I don't know what your thoughts are on that one, because I expected Marcy to be inside the top 10 rounds.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and especially for Roto, it's all team construction. You can't take Chandler Simpson, and you have to have a plan for power. Yes, you're going to get a ton of steals, but it's all of those eggs are in one basket. If something happens to Chandler Simpson, you are totally screwed in one pack, in kind of if he gets hurt. So I would lean Marcy, but I'm in the position to, I shouldn't say draft neither. I would probably draft Marcy. I'm not interested at all in Chandler Simpson. It's just too much of your stolen base capital is with one guy. And whenever you have so much invested in one person, that you know they can disappoint you in life.
Ain't that the truth? Round 15, 169 to 180, a lot of hitters on this board. We do have a couple pitchers we will discuss here shortly. We'll discuss them actually tomorrow as well, both two of them at least. But hitter-wise, you have some definite olds for you to enjoy here, and then a couple young catchers. That's quite beautiful on this board, Ryan. So I'll start with you. Is who do you like here? Because I see a great, great catcher to target.
Yeah. Who does the room think is the most consistent, boring player in round 15? Matt Chapman. That's my pick. It's Matt Chapman. Batting average isn't going to be there. I mean, hit 240, 250, something like that is what you can expect. Tons of power. I know the park probably doesn't help him a lot, but he's right-handed. The park isn't that bad for right-handed hitters. So still runs a little bit. He had that stolen base spike 2 years ago, and we were like, oh, what's it going to go back down to? Matt Chapman still contributes in bags. And again, volume, consistent, boring. I know I'm probably being boring talking about boring players, but boring wins.
It did for you this year, that's for darn sure. And I love Chappie, obviously being a Giants fan. I think he might steal a little more this year, not back to what we saw a few years ago, but you'll be overall pretty happy with how that went. I mean, I think we talked about it also. He missed a couple weeks with injury, and if you kind of do the on-pace stuff we're not supposed to do, actually had a pretty decent season when all things were said and done. So for me, I'll ask you, Ryan. So it's Alejandro Kirk, Samuel Basayo, and Kyle Teal here. Who do you think I'm going to pick?
Kirk.
No, just because he's a chubby boy doesn't mean I'm going to pick him.
I did not give my reason for why I thought you would pick Kirk. I just said Kirk.
I just assumed. For me, it's Kyle Teal. Kyle Teal is, for me, he could be a poor man's goose. Augustin Ramirez, who everyone knows, I like him so much. Huge fan of the goose. But Kyle Teal, to me, he's off of that pace, but he's pretty darn good. Like last year between AAA and the bigs, 16 homers, 10 steals. I know they're two different levels, but it's a guy that we've seen power and speed from. And more importantly, something Ramirez does not do, Kyle Teal hits for average. He hit .273 last year with the White Sox, .295 at AAA. He's never hit worse than .255 at any level of the minors. This was one of the best prospects the Red Sox had at one point in time, shipped him to the White Sox. The crochet thing, I think, worked. I think we can all accept that by now. But Teal was quite a nice return there. And 23 years old, going to be 24. I love the upside of getting maybe at least 15-10, hopefully, with a really, really good batting average. I loved how the White Sox hit him right in the middle of the order. most of the second half of the season, which is also a plus if you're looking for any kind of run production from a catcher. So as a catcher too, I'm a huge Kyle Teal fan. I think he's got catcher one upside when all things are said and done. And to find that speed was like when we did our catcher review, there was not much at all, because with JTR kind of falling off the map, and like Goose was your speed for the most part at catcher. So if you can throw Teal in that mix also, and he hits for average, which most catchers don't do, I guess that's a pretty big boost for me.
I don't know why Dennis Santana's on this list. That's
someone's got to save games in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
All 40 of them.
Also interesting, the two starting pitchers in this group, Drew Rasmussen and Tanner Bibee, both converging at a similar ADP, but man, did they have completely different seasons in 2025. Tanner Bibee, I know we were both big on, and one thing we will always do on Bubba and the Bloom is self-deprecating humor. We will take our L's. We were both very high on Tanner Bibee, and that was brutal. It kind of hurts to see Tanner Bibee at the end of our show, at the end of round 15.
Yeah, it kind of hurts. I have to listen about him tomorrow, too, because you put that all in together, so thanks. But yeah, Tanner Bibee is just one of the more frustrating pitchers in baseball, just because you look at his pitch mix and the quality of certain pitches, and he throws the other ones a lot more. It makes you wonder what's going on there. And Cleveland used to be good with pitchers, so that's a little tilting. Drew Rasmussen's interesting, though. We talked about him the other night. If they let him go deeper into games, which I think they will, it was quite the innings jump this season for Rasmussen, but loved what we saw. Ratios were great. Like to see a tick up in strikeouts, but that's probably why he's down here compared to earlier, because the ratios were awesome. But it's the innings and the strikeouts that kind of hinder him a bit. He's got to see where they take him at the next level in Tampa, because those boys at least used to know how to get guys to pitch, right, Jason?
Right. He's had three elbow surgeries. Let him pitch as much as he wants until he's out again.
That seems to be the philosophy in baseball. Ask Tyler Glasnow. You got anybody else on this list? Anybody in the crowd that we were on these slides you'd like discussed out of curiosity before we wrap things up? Because, yeah, right over here, Adam.
So for the podcast, for basically the gist of the question is how do we – so, yes, like last year, middle rounds were, the most common players all came from there. Is that a year-to-year thing? But just in general, I think the question is more like how do we analyze 1 year of whatever – and kind of balance that with, is that just a one-year thing? We don't want to overreact to that 1 year of data. I think for me, you don't want to overreact to it, but I think it's also important to at least consider. I think especially in terms of evaluating players, I always take the long view. I personally think we, in general, I'm very guilty of this. We look at last year's stats and do that so much, and we just think that this group of 162 games is what that player was and who that player is. I just don't think that's the case. I think these guys can adapt, change over time. It works both ways and get older, but you can also, especially for some of these prospects, you adjust to the game, you adjust to the adjustments, and you can improve. I think you have to look at it over a longer trend to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I think we kind of work together up here is this is where your old approach comes in. You want that sample size. Like, you look at the whole deal. Where one thing we talk about a lot on shows is I'll give the younger player a chance, where I'll be like, okay, I saw some changes. Now, to your point, how do we justify them as changes? $1 million question. You're probably going to be wrong more than you're right. But some of those you have to jump on, like the Jacob Marcy thing. At that ADP, if he does turn into the, you know, some people have even said he's the next PCA. Now, if that's a good thing, I don't know. That's up to you to decide. But if he's the next PCA, he's also not a 14th round player. So do you believe in that small sample showing you that? Or do you want to see the, you know, Julio Rodriguez has done a 20-20, 30-30 guy for four seasons. Now we've got a sample at that point. Do you wait to see that and then pay a first round price eventually? Or do you try to strike gold and match it with a Julio at a first round price? It's just kind of a, where's your risk reward?
No, we make fun of each other all the time.
My
general philosophy, yeah.
Yeah, Ryan's pretty much been steadfast on his sample size. And again, if you use projections, a lot of projections are, you know, 3-year samples, or there's at least something behind it. They're not just like throwing stuff at a wall and seeing what sticks. So if you're more of a projection-based approach to drafting, you're going to want a sample size. That's just pretty much how it's going to go. I don't want to speak for you, but it's pretty much the gist of the conversation is if you are going to focus a ton on projections, like with Ben Tidd, that's what he does. Toby did. You, like, I somehow partner up with guys that are very smart, obviously, because I can't do these things, and projections. So that's, yeah, kind of how it works. Anything else? Anybody? Questions? No. Testing. Yeah, Burks.
I know you're a burger guy, and he was on the first slide, and he was the last.
So question, Jake Berger, why do we think he's the lowest drafted on this Bloom board of ADP fallers from 25 to 26? Jake Berger is the cheapest of all of them, cheaper than Marcus Semien, Josh Lowe, Marcelo Zuna even. Scott's saying, why is that? And as the Berger guy, we will let you answer that.
It's a combination. You know, you see the 103 games played was the lowest he's had since 2022. The multiple obliques year after year now. Do people think it's a trend? Like, do you want to believe things are happening for a reason? I'm not saying you do, but, like, if you follow the trends. And it's the skills. Like, the skills looked really good if you looked under the hood, as Ryan was mentioning. But if you just look at, you know, a guy hit 236 and he only hit 16 home runs. And, again, he didn't play games. He's going to be 30 years old. Trust me, getting older doesn't get easier to stay healthy. So, I think that's what a lot of people look at, especially early drafts. It's all recency. A lot of it's recency bias before you can dig in and you know, either listen to goofballs like us try to help you out or dig in yourself. But I think when people look at it, they see the ADP and they still see the, you know, the barrel rates and the hard hit rates and all that's still there. It's a question then, is playing time going to be there next season? And can he stay healthy? What do you believe in? If you believe he stays healthy and plays 130, 140 games, that's a really good price. But it just depends on what you believe in.
All right.
One more.
We got one from Andy.
Can you pull up the Arcane Rock Fallers?
Strike out to walk Fallers, yep.
So I was curious, excluding obviously Logan Gilbert and Terry Schoolwell, are you fading these guys? Or do you, like, are you doing it on a case-by-case basis? Like, are you trying to rationalize some of these falls? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely a case-by-case thing with all these guys. You need to it's never as simple as, oh, target the guys in the green, fade the guys in the red. Like, for me, Framber Valdez, you know, things kind of fell apart when he somehow beaned his own catcher in a game, but at the end of the year, and that probably will cost him some money as a free agent. Someone like that, young enough where I don't think he's falling apart, has enough of a consistent track record where I'm not too worried about a 2-month sample for Framber Valdez. So someone like that, I'm giving them a pass for a bad 2 months. They, that can happen. Someone like a Spencer Strider or a Mackenzie Gore, who seems to do this every single year, a Hunter Brown, who is kind of in uncharted workload territory. Like, there's, it's all, you know, it all depends on these. So it's not just a kind of target, you know, universal fade for the red guys.
Like, I'll flip it the other way for you, just something to think about going forward. Does an increase in a Jack Leiter or a Shane Smith, of all people, is that like, oh, I got to go draft Shane Smith in a draft? I'm not saying it's not a bad move. I'm just saying it's the point of the Bloom boards, like, full circle. Like, it's just something to dig in on more. Was it a guy playing with an injury? We don't know about it. Was it a guy that the pitch mix changes? We've talked about many times. Was it, you know, bad luck's not your answer? But there's a lot of factors, especially with pitchers. And then you think second half falls, is he getting tired? Is like, there's a million things along the lines there. But it's a fair question. It's just a matter of, I don't know, where all the dust settles on that one.
I just think it's a really good way to find outliers that, like, a projection system won't catch. And if there is something there, then yes. Like, if there is a pitch mix change for Semien Woods-Richardson, I'm interested. If it's someone like a Logan Gilbert, Tarik Skubal, we know who they are. I'm not going to say I'm not interested in those guys, but I don't care as much about the late fall. So it's just a way to highlight these guys and find those outliers.
All righty.
Happy hour time. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate it. Enjoy your evening.